Hello, everybody. Welcome to Monday Night Live, the 220th edition of the Live and Uncut podcast with brilliant speakers from all over the world. I'm absolutely delighted today to have David Thomas with me. Dave Thomas, who's sitting in Halifax after spending 10 years in the USA. David originally was a firefighter for 11 years and then became a memory champion in the USA, appeared on Oprah Winfrey and put her in her place. That's what you did, David. That's what you told me. David is a Yorkshireman. He's a blunt Yorkshireman, which is a bit like being a Texan in America, with our friend Tim Durkin, who's on today. Dave, thanks for joining us. It's a real pleasure to have you with us. Give us a snapshot of David Thomas's life. David, you're muted. You're muted, sir.
So it was challenging growing up because my mother was an alcoholic. So that destroyed a marriage to my father. She then married a guy who was 65 years old when she was only 30, and I was only six. So life growing up for the first kind of 15, 16 years was incredibly bad. It was just, there was a lot of abuse in the house, things I can't really share. She'd get drunk and do stuff. It is in a book. The book has been the Sunday Times number one bestseller. So this isn't, you know, it's on the record. And my stepfather used to beat me up every night because that was his idea of fun. So by the time I get to 16, everything's going badly wrong. I get in trouble with the police. I get a criminal record, attempted suicide twice. And, you know, I get kicked out of school. So I've never been to college, never been to uni. And, you know, at 16, I'm working for £1 an hour in a factory. And it just kind of, things basically organically grew from there, really. So I eventually got an office job for £2 an hour. That wasn't any better. Then at the age of 20, I joined the fire service. And without trying to be too over the top, that really did save my life because I was into drinking drugs. I'd have been dead by 30, if not earlier. And the fire service saved me.
Wow. And so how did you get into memory? I mean, from being a fireman to being a memory champion in 2 years.
Well, I was watching, I was struggling with the exams in the fire service. So I managed to get through my probation. I got it extended. I wasn't very good at, wasn't very academic. And then I sat the fire service promotion exams, just kept failing them. So one day I'm watching TV, saw a guy memorize a pack of playing cards. And I was like, that is cool, right? You know, because the lads would like that at work. It's all about peer group pressure. So I bought this guy's book I saw on TV. And 8 months later, I went to the World Memory Championships in London and came fourth.
Now, come on, it wasn't that easy. You didn't just read a book and do it. You must have had some coaching.
No. I mean, the guy I've been talked about, the guy in the Northeast, Creighton. I mean, he was good because he gave me an insight into what the competition was like. But there's nothing else. It was just me and a book.
So
I literally just turned up 8 months later. You know, I just literally just got a train to London, been to London like once in my life when I was at school. Had a plastic bag with some cards in it, stayed in a scummy little motel, and then just turned up at the Strand, at Simpsons in the Strand.
But you must have been practicing a lot of spare time in the firefighting business. Did you ever
practice? I practiced a lot. And I practiced a lot. The thing is, I have an addictive personality. I'm not an addict. I know the difference. My mother was an addict. That killed her at 54. She died of an alcohol-induced heart attack. So I know what an addict looks like. I'm not an addict, but I've got addictive tendencies. And I am absolutely all or nothing in everything I do, which means that I've had massive highs, massive lows. I've been like a tornado on crack. It's just been a massive roller coaster. And so, you know, it's just this, you know, creating mayhem everywhere. But at the time, it was good because the thing is, I bought this book and I was living in a bedsit, which for those in America call a studio. So it was one room. So my bed's in a corner. It all sounds very cliched, but trust me, it's all true. And, you know, there's a kitchen sink. There's a kitchen outside. And this is it. I'm sat there in a moldy flat bedsit. And I read this book. And I have a go. And it shows me how to memorize 10 objects. And so I learned. I tested myself. I got 5. And then I did this technique. And I could do all 10. And I was like, what the fuck has just happened? I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, you know, when you just sat there going, I don't know what's quite, and so you're like, well, what else is in this book? So you're like, and then all of a sudden it was just like, then I couldn't stop doing it. And it was just like I was doing it 2-3 hours a day, because in the fire service in the UK, it's a cliche, but true. Everybody has a part-time job. So the plasterers or electricians or whatever, I didn't have a part-time job. So because I'd never learned any manual skills. So I was literally just sat there, and I'd just sit there and do it for 3 or 4 hours a day. And I just became very, very good very quickly through no natural skill. I have no natural gift for it at all. My brain was tested in 2002 at University College in London. It's exactly the same as anybody else's. So the number of connections, everything else is identical. It was just practice. And because there are no, it's not like going to the gym. I go to the gym, I can bench press 300 pounds. I can't go tomorrow and just decide I'm going to do 340, right? I'll crumble. And the thing is, I may never do 340. And we used to incremental progress, but the thing with memory is you could just have exponential progress. And so I went from not being able to remember 13 things on a fire extinguisher, which is one of the things in the fire service exam, to being able to remember 1300 digits in a row in an hour.
Did you have an inkling as a young man that you had a good memory, or was this just something that happened?
No.
Wow. Wow.
My English has always been excellent because my mother made me read. My mother used to read voraciously, 3-4 books a week. And she used to go down to the public library and she'd go, you can get any book, but you're going to get a book. So back in the day, it was Billy Bunter's Grey Friars. So I read all the Billy Bunter books, and she just said, you can get any book, but you've got to read a book. So my English has always been good. Her English was flawless. So my English is excellent. Everything else is shit.
Now, I looked at your YouTube video when you were on Oprah. That was quite something, wasn't it, with Oprah? And she tested you. And I saw you go through this routine of closing your eyes when you were recalling the memory. And you got everything right, which was great. But is that a routine you go through to visualize? Because I think it was dates of birth, wasn't it? Talk us through what she asked you.
Yeah, she asked me to memorize 50 dates and birth of people in the audience. So, and then I had to remember the last 50 Oprah shows. And then she would give me the name of somebody in the audience. They stood up and I had to say what date of birth they had. So it for a memory guy, it wasn't overly taxing. Although they did put me under pressure. So I went to Chicago to go on the show. There were two things I had to learn, which I've just said. One of them they gave me the night before. So I got to the room, then they sent me the stuff and I had to learn it the night before. The other one I had to learn on the morning, which is interesting. And that was nice because what ended up happening is they filmed in the afternoon at the Oprah show. So I got taken to the studio in the morning and I was on my own and it was great. So I'm in a little mezzanine area in the entrance, near the entrance of the show. I'm stood on there waiting for a runner to come and get me. And Oprah walked out of a door. And she's like, on her own, there's no bodyguards, it's her building, you know. And she looked at me and she went, who are you? And I went, my name's Dave. And I went, who are you? And she went, I'm Oprah. I went, I know, love, seeing you on TV. And she just burst out laughing, right? Because nobody takes the piss out of Oprah. She thought that was hilarious. And so she went, what are you doing? I said, what would you think I'm doing? I'm coming on your show. I won't be here for anything else, would I? She goes, what are you talking about? And I said, memory. She went, that's really interesting. So we had a big chat about it and she was amazing. Because my experience of having met a lot of famous people, and you will have, Derek, is that if people can get there on talent alone, like say footballers or musicians, they can be right across the spectrum from being, you know, understanding the value of people around them to being incredibly selfish because they don't need anybody else. But somebody like Oprah didn't get there on talent alone. She got there on people buying into her mission. I mean, it's like a village, is this set of studios. It's just enormous. So I went there and I got tested. And I mean, I shut my eyes because I'm, you know, it just helps me focus and concentrate, really.
Yeah.
That was it.
Wow. And now, come on, give us a little bit of practice now. Some of us are on this show in the second part of our lives, about halfway through, hopefully. What tips can you give us for improving our memory? And the second question is, do we lose memory? Or someone told me that you never forget anything. It's always in there, but it's the recall that's the difficult part of it.
Well, improving your memory just comes down to one thing, and that's using imagination. So because we have a perfect imagination. If I describe to you this house, you can imagine it. Man, it'll look like the real thing, but you can imagine it. So we have a perfect imagination, can imagine anything. So what you do is you take the abstract and turn it into an image. So for example, the way I did numbers was, number 15 was Albert Einstein. Just, you don't have, you're muted, but put your hand up if you can tell me why. If you think you've worked out why, 15 is Albert Einstein. So we've got one person. So the reason it's 15 is because the first and the fifth letters in the alphabet are A and E.
Wow.
So 23 is Billy Connolly, Bill Clinton. 42 is David Bowie. So I have 100 people from 00 to 99. So what I do is you give me a two-digit number, 48, Damon Hill. It's instant. So what I've done is I've taken the abstract, which is the number, and turned it into something concrete, which is a person. So then what I do is I just memorize people around rooms, around buildings. So it's Damon Hill is over there. It's number 48. Bill Clinton's over here. That's 23. So if my pin on the card is 4823, it's Damon Hill talking to Bill Clinton. And that's how we do it. So it's just taking the abstract and turn it into an image. In terms of the second part with age, that's more complicated. The way the brain works is, it's almost the same as the rest of the body. The problem is, the older we get, the less that we use it. So when you talk to somebody who's 60, 90% of people who are 60, and this won't apply to you because you've got an unusual group, but 90% of people who, if you say to them, you know, what does the future look like? There's one word coming out of their mouth, retirement. And then when you go, well, what are you going to do? When you go, well, I'm going to spend more time with the grandkids and I'm going to do this and this. What they don't do is sit there and say, I'm going to do a degree. I'm going to sit there and learn something that's really, really complicated. And so the challenge is, the older we get, the less that we do. In fact, most people, by the time they get to 50, are doing the same job with the same people. They've got the same pub talking, the same rubbish. They got the same hobbies, the same pastimes. They got the same restaurants to eat the same food because it's the favorite. And so the thing is, the brain becomes very powerful and can perform very well, but in a very narrow field. Think about, you mentioned doctors earlier, right? And ChatGPT. How many people value their GP anymore, their general doctor, family doctor? Hardly anybody, right? The last time I went in to see my GP, I said to him, I've got this issue. And he said, have you been on the internet? And I went, no. He went, that is very refreshing. And I said, no, you need to understand something, doctor. I would never mistake my 7 minutes on the internet for your 7 years at med school. That's, you know, I'm not an idiot. I look like one, right? I might be daft, but I'm not an idiot. And so the thing is that, but would you value a brain surgeon? Yeah, of course you would. We've got this show on at the moment, Surgeons, right, on BBC, and they're just filming surgery. It's compelling viewing. You know, they're going in and they're yanking it out. It's amazing. It's just, but GP, it's like, no, it's all right, mate. I'll go on the internet. I've got ChatGPT. I'll sort myself out. Idiots, right? And so the thing is that the problem is that, you know, we become brain surgeons are valued more because we've got a narrower field. And what I always find interesting with this surgeon program is how many surgeons are in the room for one piece of surgery, because they're so specialized. So what we do is, as we go through our career, it starts here in our 20s, having a bit of fun, throw everything at the wall, see what shit sticks. And then it gets narrower. And then you get to 50 or 55 and you become very, you know, you can brilliant, but in a really narrow field. And if you're not there, you're kind of struggling. Mm. And so the thing is, the older we get, the less that our brain works across the spectrum. And so the less that we do. And people say, well, I'm going to have a go and I'm going to learn this, I'm going to do that. But we don't, because when there's not the external pressure of work in particular, we're like water. We take the path of least resistance.
Well, I don't think that's people on here, because people on here are very keen to learn. So, which is great. So we are the exception. Now, I also read that you fell out with Eamon Holmes on a TV program on GMTV. What was that all about?
Well, I've been shafted on TV more times than I can care to imagine. It's just awful going on TV because it's so fast moving, and you know, you turn up and it's all, and they just change stuff. See, you're chatting to a researcher on the phone. By the time it's gone through 15 different layers, you get to the producer and everything else. It's all just changed. And the only time they absolutely did what they said they were going to do was Oprah, believe it or not. So when you go on American TV, what happens is, or every person knows the questions. So that's why when you see your favorite comedian on Jay Leno, or Leno's not on anymore, but on The Tonight Show, you know, Fallon, any of those guys, they all know what the questions are. So they get prepared and they come out with these wonderful, you know, wonderful comments, and they all look great. Over here, that doesn't happen. So what happens is, it doesn't matter who it is. So when Emily Maitlis, you know, it's on Netflix at the moment, when she interviewed Prince Andrew, he didn't know the questions. She told him, "I'm not telling you the questions." When Tom Cruise went on Michael Parkinson, and this is great, right? Well, I think it's great. Some of you might not agree with this, but I'm going to say it anyway. So he went on there, Michael Parkinson challenged him about Scientology. And he said, well, he said words to the effect of, it's all just a bit crackers, isn't it? And Tom Cruise wasn't used to being spoken to like that, but he didn't. And Tom Cruise was like, you're right, because he wasn't expecting it, so he didn't know what to say. So that's why TV in the UK just looks a bit more edgy than it does maybe in chat shows in the US. But the problem with me on GMTV is I got invited to go on this show. It's national TV. It's 7:30 in the morning. There's 2 million people watching it. It's live. It's up in the Northeast, right? So it's at Gateshead at the Metro Centre. So normally it's in a studio. And so I go up there and I say, right, what are you going to ask me to do? We're going to ask you to memorise a pack of playing cards. I'm like, happy days, I could do that. And so I got them to agree. Give me the pack, introduce me at 7 and give me the pack of cards and I'll do it at 28 minutes past. So I've got 28 minutes to memorise a pack of cards. I can do it in, you know, 90 seconds at a push when I'm at home. And I'm like, right, so that's what we'll do. So what they do is, right, they give this pack of cards to somebody in the audience to hold on to. And I'm like, I need the cards. Anyway, we just walk away from the audience. And then we sit down on the sofa and the woman, and I just went, I'm getting the cards. And so they interview and they went, oh, we'll give them to you later. So they give me one single solitary minute. They just shafted me, completely shafted me.
How did you deal with it?
So what I did was, I did it really slow because I thought I'll let them run out of time. So what I did was, they gave me the pack. I thought, right, I'm not going to get through all pack. So what I did was, I learned like first 15 or 20, the last 15 or 20, because they're not going to ask me any in the middle. So I started and I just go, yeah, it's a jack of clubs. And second one, I think that might, and I just slowed the whole thing down. So they're getting anxious now because it's going too slow. Anyway, she just went, so just tell me the last three. And I went, yeah, the last three, bum, bum, bum. And so it looked like I knew the whole pack, but I didn't. But, you know, they did me wrong. And it's been, honestly, I swear to God, it's just been like that. Every time I appeared on TV, apart from Oprah.
So, Dave, did you get cross with them afterwards or did you just leave?
Oh, no, you don't. Well, what's the point in getting cross? You are the definition of chopped liver. So in the UK, for those that don't know, we have this phrase, you know, you chopped liver. It means you're just a filler. They have no interest in you at all. Plus, I mean, they're never going to invite me back on. I'm a nobody. I'm not famous. I've got no pull. So you just swallow it and leave. And then, you know, in the future, what you do. So what was interesting with Oprah got in touch. Well, she didn't. Oh, by the way, just the best thing about going on Oprah is, how do you think I got on, Derek?
I've got how no idea. Got
on the biggest TV show in the world?
I've got no idea. Sorry.
Just emailed him. Right. So I went on to, because I was sat there going, because I've always been a moonshot guy, right? Ever since I was a kid. And I was like, so I sat there and I thought, I've done a bit of TV. What do I want to do? I want to go on the biggest TV show in the world. What's the biggest one? It's got to be Oprah, right? So I literally just went Oprah.com 2002. And I just went, I found an email, sent an email off. 18 months later, I got an email back saying, we're doing this thing on Record Breakers. Do you want to come on the show? Have you got any footage? So I see a phone number at the bottom. So I phone them up and I go, my name's Dave. You just sent me an email. What's it about? Guinness Record Breaker thing. And they went, have you got any footage? And I went, even better than that, I can come on the show. And they went, and she literally laughed down the phone. She was like, oh, 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 oh. And I went, No, seriously, I've been on TV, me. Don't worry about that, love. I'm good. I'm good for this. And she went, we need to see you on doing live TV, but it's got to be on the BBC. Can't be any other channel. BBC is currency in America. This was 20 years ago. So anyway, I just done Blue Peter, right? So a kid's show, right? A massive kid's show. But it was huge because it just launched CBeebies. There was like, we did it. And the biggest studio they had a bit down at, whatever it's called, Wood Hall or Wood Street. But the big one down.
Wood Lane.
And so we did it, and there was like 500 kids in the audience. I've memorized all the names and dates of birth. I got tested. I got it right. It was a great show. So anyway, she said, you got to get me a copy of this. So anyway, I got this footage. And so I met a guy in a Halifax car park on a Sunday morning, gave him a VHS tape back in the day. And 18 hours later, I got a phone call saying, if you can be here on Wednesday, you can come on the show. So off I went over, and I went on the show. What was your original question?
I can't remember either. I'm not the memory man. You are. Tell us about...
It's a great experience. So anyway, in terms of reverse engineering, so what happened was then, what we did was we chatted, and what they did was they said, right, we want you to do this stuff. And I just, so they sent me a list of stuff and it was all ridiculous. And because it was so big, the TV show, I went the opposite direction. I was like, I've got to make sure it's super safe, that whatever it is they asked me to do, I can do. So I just turned around and said, I'm not going to do it. And they went, what do you mean you're not going to do it? You don't tell us what you're going to do. And so then I asked a question, which I've got to say was a moment of genius, which I really have. And I just said to the researcher or the producer, I said, are you brilliant at doing TV shows? And she goes, yeah, of course we are. We're Oprah. We do the best TV show in the world. And I said, well, I'm the best memory guy you're ever going to meet. I said, you do the TV side. I'll tell you what will work from a memory perspective. And we'll do the best memory segment you've ever seen on TV. She went, okay, fair enough. It sounds fine. So I then sent some stuff through, and they chose what it was from the list.
Wow, fantastic. Now, you spent 10 years in America. You didn't tell us why that was, and you got your green card. America's a bit different from Halifax, isn't it?
Yeah, just a touch. It's like Halifax, but without the culture, is America. You know what I mean? And for those of you that don't know Halifax, there's a couple of people. Halifax is 50,000 of us live here, right? But there's only three surnames in the phone book. Think of us like a town of cousins, yeah? Inbreeding's a group down the road. It's all for fun. But the thing is that my dad's lived in America since I was 11. So he lives in Richmond, Virginia. He's still there. And we're not close, but we get on fine. We speak like twice a year. It's a great relationship. And so we're fine. But in 2002, I spoke at NSA, National Speakers Association. There were breakout sessions, you know, in the week. I got the last one on the last day. It was supposed to be a dead slot. So Graham Davis was introducing me, another amazing speaker. I said, Graham, will you do the intro? Because you have an introducer. He said, yeah. Dave, make sure you get some tape. I said, what do I need some tape for? He said, because nobody will be there. Be 150 seats in the room. You'll be lucky if you get 15 because the ball is 3 hours later. I'm like, thanks very much. So I forgot to get some tape. So Graham was like, you're killing yourself, mate. Well, standing room only. We had 170 people in the room. It was just magical. And so from that, I managed to get a contact that then meant I spoke in Vegas in 2003. So I spoke at Paris, 2,000 people. All the big hitters were there from NSA. I got to know those guys. First time I've spoken in outside, apart from NSA. And I was like, you know, when you sit there and you go, I want to live in America. How hard can it be? Right? So what I did was I came back from Vegas and I just found a green card lawyer in London, Nicole. And she'd only just started out on her own. And I said, I want a green card. And she went, you do know how hard it is. And I went, well, let's have a go, see how far we get. Now, I'm going to tell you something now, Derek, that's going to make you laugh your bollocks off, right? Because when you get a green card, there's all different categories. But then there are some for people who are like musicians and scientists, right? And what it's called is Alien of Extraordinary Ability. Right? Only an American could come up with a phrase like that, right? You're right, aren't you? You know what I'm saying, Tim? Look at him. He knows. He knows. Honestly, every American is as mad as a box of frogs. But I love them all. Every single one I've ever met. You're crazy, man. But I love all of you. You're amazing. So anyway, I applied for the green card and I got the green card just on the back of the memory stuff, because there's no criteria for that one. You just you send your stuff off to what was Grosvenor Square and just hope they say yes. It really is as simple as that. And it took about a year and I got the green card and off I went. And so I lived in the States on and off for 10 years. I went to live with Tim Gard. He's an amazing speaker. I started in Denver. Denver was great. We lived out near the airport. That was beautiful. Denver's just such a beautiful city. And then I lived a bit with my dad in Richmond. Richmond is a beautiful city because it's a federal city. So even though it's kind of at the top of the South, it's got an amazing culture, the Civil War stuff. I mean, you know, Richmond's pretty cool. And it's got a lot of money because of the federal stuff. But I ended up living in New York. Didn't know a single soul. Just went and got myself a flat. East 62nd and Lexington, Upper East Side. And I was living in this $5 million brownstone. Got the top floor. The woman was about 85. She got the bocce on the whole building. A couple of $1,000 a month. Absolute steal. And being a single guy living in New York before the crash was incredible. And I left the month of the crash. I was outside Lehman's when they all came out with the boxes.
Wow.
A mate of mine phoned me up and he went, you need to get down to Lehman's. You're going to see something that is a moment in history. We all just sat there and watched them coming out with boxes. And I came back for personal reasons. I had three kids here. So I was going over there for 3 or 4 weeks, coming back for 3 or 4 weeks. And I was chasing two rabbits and catching neither. So I came home.
Wow. And now you teach CEOs to speak better, give good presentations, and get over their nerves and come across much more confidently. What's your secrets for doing that, Dave?
It's all about process, Derek. And actually, nerves is not really the biggest issue for the people I teach. Like, for example, tomorrow, there's a guy came last Monday. He's a chief exec. He's in Zurich tomorrow. He's speaking to 60 people, 30 billionaires, family officers, and 30 chief investment officers. So we just sit down, we go through his talk. He was slightly nervous, but he felt a lot more confident when we finished. But great presenting for almost everybody is 90% process. Just understanding you need a great start. You've got to get out of the blocks quick. Nobody's got any attention span anymore. I'll give you a little insight into speaking. In 2000, the attention span was 15 seconds. In 2008, it was 8 seconds. And now YouTube have worked it out that when you're watching when you're on YouTube, you decide whether you're going to click on a video and watch it in 16 milliseconds. So the thing is that it's understanding that nobody's got any attention span. This isn't a kid's issue. We're all the same. We all sit there with our phones flicking through while we're watching TV because the TV's not coming quick enough. So we're all in the same boat. You've got to be out as quick as you can. Raw facts, data and statistics kill every talk. So you've got to get into analogies, metaphors, stories, examples, and ways in which you've got to go into their world, you know, not yours. So all the thing we did last week was, what's in it for them? Why would they invest in you? You know, what's their mission? Because it's family offices. Family offices, as you're probably aware, is basically somebody made £1 billion like three generations ago, and it goes into a trust and it drips down and they have to spend it on something. And so it's like, why would they spend it on you? It's not making money, it's mission, it's all that other stuff. So last week it was about give them some stats, but tell them what's in your heart.
Well, Dave, we're nearly out of time. So it's an absolutely fantastic presentation. What's one last tip you're going to give me for improving my bandwidth on my memory?
The golden rule is do something that's hard. The harder it is, the better. So it's not you, we're all results oriented people. So we're always going to want, if we learn a foreign language, we want to be able to speak it. We want to be able to put a sentence together. If we learn to play music, we want to be able to play a piece of music. But I'm afraid it's the age old adage, it's the journey, not the destination. The harder it feels, the better. So the big ones are chess, music, And the reason why is because they use more parts of the brain. So it's chess, music, dance, art. Those are the big four. So foreign languages. Learn any of them.
Coming on Derek Arden's live and uncut chat show on a Monday night. That's clearly got to be the secret. David Thomas, can I thank you so much for coming on? And can I ask members of Monday Night Live to give David the usual round of applause? You're on gallery view. David, thanks very much. Will you stay on and join us for a few questions afterwards?
Any questions at all? Love to answer questions.
Well, if you're watching this on YouTube or you're watching or listening to this on the Negotiators podcast, if you enjoyed it, please like it. Please sign up for the channel. And if you want to get in touch with David Thomas, Google David Thomas and the Memory Man, and up he'll come. There's a few David Thomases around in the world. I saw David, but not people with an outstanding memory. Thanks for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Derek. Cheers, mate.